so I don't forget. And then we'll begin question and answer. And that will take about 15 to 20 minutes, which takes us to 1:30. So we like to start the Q&A by 1:10 or 1:15, just to leave 15 to 20 minutes. And also, we like to invite participants to either use the raise hand function or to paste their question into the chat, just so they have the option. So just make sure to look out for both of those types of questions. I can also help out there. I think that's everything. Does anyone have any questions?
Suzanne, are you okay for stopping at 1:10 so we have more time for discussion? Or? Yeah.
That should be fine. Yeah, I've got about 35 minutes actually.
Okay.
So that should be fine.
That sounds perfect. And you got a PowerPoint or are you?
I do. Yeah. So this is the first slide of it. So we're already on it.
Oh, wonderful. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So that means that we won't be able to see the audience as you're speaking. We'll come back together as a community after 35 minutes.
Yeah. I'll stop sharing when I'm done.
Perfect. So I'm going to admit people now and begin the live stream, and then I'll message you when you're free to start, Alpa.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Alpa, you're muted. I don't know if you know that.
Oh, thank you, Chico. There I am talking to myself. No, it's wonderful to see you all. I can't see everybody on the screen, but I can feel your presence. It's lovely to be here at the LSC International Inequalities Institute Tuesday research seminar. My name is Alpa Shah. I'm a professor in the anthropology department at LSC and the convener of the Global Economies of Care research team here. And it's wonderful to welcome back Suzanne Wesendorf, who is going to be talking to us today about infrastructures of migrant arrivals in East London. Her paper is titled "The Library is Like a Mother," and I'm really pleased to be chairing this seminar. Suzanne is a visiting professor here at the LSC, and she's a professor of social anthropology at the Centre for Trust, Peace and Social Relations at Coventry. Dr. Wesendorf's research focuses on immigration, integration, ethnicity, race. She's a social anthropologist, been doing research on migration, on transnationalism, diversity for more than 10 years. Her work focuses on understanding new forms of social inclusion and exclusion in context of immigration-related diversity. So I won't say any more right now, but this is in this seminar, we have this in a meeting format so that we can see our audiences and have a more interactive event. Although today we have a PowerPoint, so we will get together after 35 minutes and be able to see each other and talk to each other and have a discussion. when Suzanne finishes her presentation. May I please ask you to keep yourselves muted and videos on when possible, especially when we come back together. And there'll be a chance for you to post questions following the presentation. You can, of course, feel free to do so while we're running through the presentation. And you can raise the hand function on your screens or also directly paste your question in chat. And please do state your name and affiliation where you can. Okay, I hand over to Suzanne. Many thanks to everybody for coming and enjoy the event. Over to you, Suzanne.
Thank you, Alpa, for your kind introductions. It's really nice to be here, to be back here. So what I'm going to be talking about today is based on research that I undertook while based at the International Inequalities Institute. And this was preliminary research while developing a larger research proposal that is a comparative European project, which I'm going to be mentioning again later on. So today I'm just going to first give you a bit of a conceptual introduction into the notion of arrival infrastructures, and then I'll give you some empirical examples from my research in East London. Now, just to dive straight into a definition of arrival infrastructures, these have been defined as those parts of the urban fabric within which newcomers become entangled on arrival and where their future social mobilities are produced. Now, arrival infrastructures often emerge in places which have seen the historical overlayering of migration. So these places have often been described as arrival areas, often found in so-called arrival cities, which have seen immigration for many decades. And as a result of these past immigrations, these areas are characterized by a wealth of institutions, organizations, and social spaces and actors, which specifically facilitate the arrival of newcomers. Now, much of this discourse around arrival cities and arrival infrastructures has taken off since the publication of Doug Saunders' book entitled Arrival City some years ago. And since then, there have been various research and public policy initiatives around this notion, including my own research projects. Now, just to give you a few sort of concrete examples of arrival infrastructures, these include, for example, shops or hairdressers as information hubs, religious sites, language classes, etc. And this table exemplifies the kinds of arrival infrastructures one might find in any given urban area. And by looking at these sites, we can examine how exactly migrants access settlement information, and especially those migrants who have little digital literacy and little social capital. Now, arrival infrastructures could also be seen as kind of a social ecosystem of facilities and resources between which signposting could take place. And I'll get back to this idea again a little bit later. And importantly, arrival infrastructures are often also sought in other urban areas. And migrants might, for example, go to other areas in a city or beyond to access places like religious sites or specific shops. And also transnational or translocal resources like social media, for example, can function as arrival infrastructures. Now, this arrival infrastructure lens is an interesting way of looking at migrant incorporation for several reasons. First, it focuses on a specific urban area rather than an ethnic group or an individual migrant. Now, integration theory has rarely paid attention to the role played by a specific place for migrant integration. Mostly either characteristics of migrants themselves, like educational or socioeconomic backgrounds, or the field of integration policy and their effects on migrants have been at the center of analysis. But the arrival infrastructure lens is useful because it turns the focus to initiatives and support in specific places. Now, while of course it's important to also look at integration policies and characteristics of individual migrants, where someone arrives plays an important role in how they settle. And Jenny Phillimore and David Robinson have done some quite important work about this in recent years. Now, there's also a significant body of literature on so-called context effects, especially in deprived urban areas. And this literature has focused on how neighborhood characteristics affect residents of various backgrounds in regards to their social mobility. And while this literature provides useful findings that show that the effects of local deprivation on access to resources, it has been criticized for its overly localized focus. And the arrival infrastructures approach sort of enables us to look at both the role of local conditions and resources, but also how individuals might access resources beyond the neighborhood. Now, another reason why this arrival infrastructural approach can be useful is that by looking at a specific arrival area, we can also look at the role of the long-established population in this area in facilitating newcomers' arrival. And related to this, for quite a while now, migration scholars have emphasized that many migrants move into places which are already highly diversified and where you don't have a dominant mainstream. And the arrival infrastructural lens builds on this criticism of the notion of so-called mainstream society. And it looks at the overlayering of ongoing migrations and how this impacts upon the arrival and social mobility of newcomers. Now, of course, social networks are extremely important for newcomers, and there exists a large body of literature on the effect of social relations on migrant integration. And studies have shown the huge importance of social networks for accessing emotional and economic support during arrival and settlement. And many of these studies have drawn on Putnam's notion of bonding and bridging social capital, as well as Wilcox's concept of linking social capital between people or institutions at different levels of a societal power hierarchy. Now, I don't want to go into these approaches and their main critiques in more detail here, but I just want to mention that in regards to newcomers' access to resources via arrival infrastructures, the notion of linking social capital can help us think about what kinds of relationships in what kinds of social spaces can facilitate access to resources and, in the longer term, social mobility. But where do people go? Where do people actually form such social contacts? Now, while there's an emerging body of literature looking at the role of place-specific opportunity structures for migrant arrival, we still lack knowledge about where exactly newcomers form social relations which might enhance their access to resources and how this is related to the actual place where they arrive. Now, one of the contributions of the arrival infrastructures lens is that it not only looks at physical infrastructures, but also the role of specific groups or actors within these infrastructures. And these actors have, for example, been described as people as infrastructures or migrant infrastructures and soft infrastructures. Building on Lindquist and his colleagues' definition of migrant brokers, such individuals and groups could also be conceptualized as arrival brokers who provide access to settlement information. And these brokers often operate within places like libraries or barbers or religious sites. Now, importantly, accessing one type of arrival infrastructure, so for example, an informal football club in a park, can facilitate access to another, like for example, an advice center or a job. And shops, cafes, street corners, parks, mosques, or churches can have vital functions as information hubs and places of sociability. Now, places like libraries, religious sites, and community organizations have also been described as social infrastructures. And the Greater London Authority has developed an interesting framework for social integration. And as part of this, they have developed the idea of a social infrastructure ecosystem. And they describe the interplay of different social infrastructures within an urban area as an ecosystem where different types of provision form a community of interconnected support. And they've applied this not just to migrants, so this is in reference to everybody living in an area. Now, local ecosystems consist of networks and services, some of which are supported by different kinds of buildings, facilities, and organizations. And the nature of a social infrastructure ecosystem can vary between different neighborhoods because of different socioeconomic conditions, as well as different historical developments of these areas. So arrival areas are characterized by a particular type of social infrastructural ecosystem shaped by the different population groups which have lived in these areas over the years. So for example, an area dominated by one migrant group might have a very different ecosystem to an area which could be described as super diverse. So social infrastructure ecosystem might vary according to the degree of immigration related diversification, which impacts on both formal social infrastructures, such as public services with, for example, specific language provisions, but also specific places of worship aimed at one or more national communities, as well as informal social infrastructures like shops or local clubs. David Robinson describes how different places provide access to different packages of resources, services, and facilities. Now, in regards to access to resources, the interconnections between different social infrastructures are crucial. So for a local ecosystem to be successful, it is the links, how, like you can see here on the slide, it's the links between social infrastructures of any kind which are crucial. And signposting between, for example, informal social infrastructures and services can make an important difference to individuals' access to financial, emotional, and social support. Links between social infrastructures, as well as the social relations formed within them, directly depend on the individuals operating in them. So for example, in spaces like community organizations or faith groups, new relationships are often brokered by staff members or volunteers who introduce new users. Also, in informal infrastructures like libraries or schools, friendly staff or receptionists can play a vital role in making individuals feel welcome and in encouraging them to seek information. Earlier, I have described these individuals as brokers who mediate between different parties. Now, brokers do not only operate in community groups or more formal social infrastructures, but also in informal social infrastructures. So for example, the owner of a kiosk at an underground station in Newham in East London, he described his role as information point. And similarly, a Brazilian cafe in Newham is known to the Portuguese speaking community as a place where information can be sought and exchanged. Now, I just want to turn to some examples of the role of arrival infrastructures for migrant arrival. And the material I'm presenting to you today, as I said, is based on preliminary research, which I undertook while still at LSE, and while developing a larger project together with the University of Leuven and the Research Institute for Regional and Urban Development in Dortmund. And we're now working on an ESRC-funded comparative project looking at Brussels, Dortmund, and East London. But today I'm just going to talk about the Newham part, the London part of the project. So Newham, I don't want to spend too much time on context, but let's just say that Newham is a classical arrival area where migrants have arrived for several decades and only a minority of the population are white British. Now, unfortunately, these numbers are based on the last census and I'm eagerly awaiting the census result of last year's census, but they're not quite out yet. So this isn't quite up to date. But what is still the case is that it's a very poor area and the population turnover is very high. And one of the reasons why it's an arrival area is because of relatively affordable rental housing. Now, for this talk today, I want to zoom into just one example, namely Angelica. And Angelica comes from Moldova, but she lived in Azerbaijan for a long time before coming to the UK. And she came to the UK on a Romanian passport, which she had due to her ancestry. And she speaks Romanian in addition to Russian and Azeri. And there were four arrival infrastructural realms which were crucial for her arrival. And this is representative of other migrants too. And these are arrival brokers, physical arrival infrastructures, the internet, and weak ties. Sorry, I'm waiting for the slide to change. Don't know if you can hear me. I notice my camera has gone off. Sorry.
We can hear you, Suzanne, but can't.
Camera's back on. Sorry, I'm trying to change the slide. Now. Okay. Sorry, bit of a hiccup. Here we are. So this is a very simplified picture of how she found resources during the first few months of her arrival. And things, of course, they get more complicated very quickly. Now here I define an arrival broker quite specifically as the main person who facilitates arrival. It's mostly a friend or a more distant first contact, and initial housing is most often arranged through this person. Now for Angelica, a Moldovan friend who had been in London for 17 years already helped her settle. She let her stay in her flat for the first 3 months, where Angelica and her two sons slept on the floor in the living room, and her friend charged her for this. And this same friend also helped her get a national insurance number by translating for her during the application process, and she charged her £100 for this. And this friend also helped her find a school for her children. Now, this example shows how relationships with arrival brokers can be both friendly as well as exploitative. So for example, some people who don't speak English can become dependent on brokers who channel them into specific jobs and don't inform them of other opportunities or of labor rights or welfare support services. Now, most of my research participants didn't entirely depend on just one broker, but they drew on different types of arrival resources. And being in an arrival area where you have physical infrastructures which signal that information or support for settlement might be available can make a big difference. Now, with physical arrival infrastructures, I refer to visible resources like, for example, an English class, but it can also be a shop or a cafe. So basically all the things that I listed in the table earlier on. And Angelica found an English class just by walking around and looking for a class. And she saw a Tamil community center where they offer classes. And she went in and asked the cleaner, who sent her down the road to an English class for migrants of all backgrounds. Now, because of the long-term presence of other migrants who knew about arrival-specific support, it was easier for Angelica to find this resource. Now, research undertaken by the local council of a neighboring borough showed that barbers and fried chicken shops are important places where people seek information. And one of my research participants who spoke no English at all, she found accommodation simply by asking in a grocery shop. And other people talked about the local library, and one of the libraries in Newham is particularly important. Now, this library represents a place which attracts a particularly large range of individuals from many different backgrounds. And the library's physical location at a busy high street, and it's set up with a large shop window with posters about community events and a continuously busy atmosphere. All of this signals that it's accessible to people of all backgrounds. And before COVID, while I was still at LSE, twice a week, a group of about 15 women used to gather for their weekly crochet group and on a large table right at the front by the window. And most of them had a migration background. And women regularly came into the library to ask members of the group about crochet, which often led to conversations about how to find other resources, for example, welfare support services. Now, the library also hosts English classes in the back, and almost all of the students that I spoke to found the class just by walking in and asking about information. One of the librarians emphasized that people come in with all kinds of questions, and she said that the library was there for everybody and for all kinds of inquiries, and she emphasized that the library is like a mother. Now, the Greater London Authority uses the notion of social front doors to refer to spaces which have a distinct presence on the street and which at the entrance convey a welcoming atmosphere as well as information about services and support. And this example of this library is a typical example of a successful social front door. Now, I just want to go back to Angelica. So of course the internet is hugely important for accessing resources or for finding out about support. And Angelica found a job through the internet. But it's quite surprising that actually this is the only thing at the beginning that she found through the internet. Now this job was in a hotel cleaning rooms, and her employers were Romanians, and that is why she found the job, because she speaks Romanian. She calls them the Romanian mafia. And these employers that treated her quite badly, they gave her double the amount of rooms to clean compared with others, and then they didn't pay her. And Angelica was quite desperate about this situation and felt very hopeless. And she ended up sitting on a bench in Newham and crying. And then someone came up to her and spoke to her in Russian. And he turned out to be a fellow Moldovan. And she told him about her problems at work, and he gave her the phone number of an organization which might help her. But he told her to just show this phone number to her employers and that they would then pay her. And she did this, and indeed they paid her. Now, if Angelica hadn't been in an arrival area, she probably wouldn't have bumped into someone speaking her language who was experienced in dealing with the kind of job exploitation which she was exposed to. But arrival areas are full of people with arrival expertise because of the historical overlayering of immigration into these areas. And this leads me to the role of weak ties. Now, with weak ties, I refer to granovetta and basically to acquaintances within an arrival area who facilitate access to resources. And as I just described with the example of the person who helped Angelica with her job, she was able to form these weak ties with individuals who have arrival expertise because she found herself in an arrival area. Now, another example of weak ties are her neighbors who told Angelica about better accommodation. And her new housemates, all of whom are migrants, told her about a doctor in the area. And yet another important weak tie for her was a teaching assistant at her son's school. And this teaching assistant speaks Turkish, which is similar to Azeri. And she was therefore able to help Angelica navigate the school. Now, as I said, this is a very simplified picture during the first few months or two upon arrival. And of course, things get more complicated over time. And as the next step on my larger comparative project, we will also aim to kind of map people's stories of arrival onto the local social infrastructure's ecosystem to see how they navigated their way through these. And it will be particularly interesting to find out how long it takes individuals to access specific resources after arrival. So for example, how long does it take to finally find permanent housing or to find a job, et cetera. So what are the general advantages of this approach, and what can we actually show with it? Now, said simply, we can show how people make their way into the city and where they find help. And by showing this, we can also identify how people might fall through the cracks, or why they might not be able to access the information they need, or why they might end up in exploitative jobs or substandard housing, or why they might end up homeless. Now, I'm aware that in some urban contexts, people don't want to be reached by the local authority, and their anonymity is at the very core of why they manage to make a living. But in the context of cities in the global north, this might be different. Most migrants, be it labor migrants, temporary migrants, asylum seekers, and even undocumented migrants, they do have some entitlements, and many are not aware of the kind of support services that are available. And by identifying where migrants go and where they find information, we can also spread information more widely, for example, about language classes or welfare support services. So to put this simply, an arrival infrastructural framework can help us analyze in detail what exists in a specific place in terms of resources and provision for newcomers. And here you can see a kind of map showing what kinds of resources someone might draw on when first arriving in a place. And this map was developed by Luz Beckmans and Dunia Salome from the University of Ghent in Belgium, and where you can see sort of what exists in an area and what provisions are available. And the arrival infrastructure lens helps us to illuminate how these provisions are accessed and what kinds of relationships exist between them. Also, we can highlight barriers to access and why certain individuals cannot find their way into specific realms like housing or health provision or social networks. So here is another illustration technique that we're currently experimenting with. And this was developed by my postdoc, Tamlin Monson. And we can see how it identifies the kinds of places, people, or media relevant in someone's arrival trajectory and the kinds of resources that were accessed through these places or networks. And we can also see how some of these people or places actually present barriers to accessing resources. And here is an illustration developed by my colleagues at ILS Dortmund, where they mapped a Syrian family's arrival trajectory in Dortmund and showed how this newcomer family made its way through the local arrival infrastructure's ecosystem and how signposting took place. And yet others have developed quite sophisticated mapping techniques. So here, researchers at the Technical University Berlin have shown refugees' trajectories through hostel facilities in Berlin and how they get moved around and how they get stuck in bureaucratic processes that can last years. Similar things happen here in the UK. And they show how this manifests itself in the geography of the city and how, and also what other places become relevant in fulfilling the practical, social, and emotional needs of these refugees. Now, in the case of Berlin, as you might be able to see on this map, but I'm aware it's quite small on this screen. Now, in the case of Berlin, refugees get moved all over the city. So the idea of integration and forming meaningful social relations within a neighborhood is completely impossible. Getting moved from one hostel to the next also makes it very, very difficult to access, for example, language classes. So with this kind of tracking of arrival infrastructures and how migrants voluntarily and involuntarily make their way through them can show how and why individuals might struggle with settling and finding their feet. And it helps us identify what kinds of spaces and institutions can be instrumental in supporting individual settlement. And just to come to some conceptual conclusions. So the arrival infrastructure's approach kind of refocuses work on migrant arrival by looking at the role of place rather than individuals and groups. Different places provide access to different packages of resources, different services and facilities. And the arrival infrastructure lens investigates how this impacts on migrants' access to resources and possible social mobility. Now, integration research tended to assume the primary responsibility of migrants on the one hand, and on the other, the state and its institutional actors for integrating migrants. But the concept of arrival infrastructures puts the spotlight on a range of formal and informal institutions and places at the local level. And this doesn't include the state, but it neither privileges it. Rather, it also takes into account sort of more informal sites like hairdressers, news agents, money transfer agencies, and so on. So our research shows how the interplay of these informal infrastructures with state-funded social infrastructures like libraries and schools, how this can play a vital role for providing support. So the arrival infrastructures approach starts with the migrants themselves, following newcomers through urban contexts where they live their lives and asking where and how they access information and support and in what way this information and support impacts on their future social mobility. And lastly, the arrival infrastructure approach also puts the spotlight on the role of long established migrants and their arrival expertise in helping newcomers. And I will end here. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Suzanne. If you wonderful. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. If you're with us, it would be great to have your videos on so we can maybe have a conversation about Suzanne.